With that, I'd like to introduce our speaker. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Frank.
Woo-hoo! Save the applause, just throw money. My name is Frank Weston. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Frank!
It has been by the grace of a loving God, good fortune, and a strong sponsorship ethic that I have contrived a reason to take a drink since January 22nd of 1992. And for that, I assure you, anybody that ever saw me drink is grateful. And I, like Brian, gave no thought to what I was going to talk about here tonight.
All right.
I'm fortunate that I have a commitment on my home group. Because I got caught up in the worldly clamors today. I was in the office all day. I got a big deadline that has to be met. So I went off my home group because I have a commitment there on Sunday nights. And I showed up and I told somebody that I was going to just stay, do my commitment, and then I was going to leave. And I worked a little bit out of the book with somebody else. And the person that I talked to, he said, well, aren't you going to Madison tonight? Or Chatham, well, that's where we're at. Damn, you're right. So, you know, rather than me sitting in Mount Arlington tonight, I came to Chatham. I like this group, and I like this group because it is centers on sponsorship and on the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to congratulate Brian for 1 year of sobriety. Of course, congratulating an alcoholic for not drinking is a lot like congratulating a cowboy with hemorrhoids for not getting on his horse. There's just certain things in life that people shouldn't do. Alcoholics shouldn't drink, but unfortunately, we do. And that's the it's not that fun. But think about it for a while. You know, people congratulate me for not drinking, and what I want to tell them is that I can't take credit for that. Because if I could have stopped drinking, you'd have a different speaker here tonight. I'd put myself beyond human aid. It appeared somewhere along in my life I crossed that line. I think it was at birth, but that's just me. I had character defects that, at birth, I believe, and all I needed to do was wet them down with a little alcohol, and they just flourished like there was no tomorrow. I'm probably better off that I drank than didn't, because my attitude in life probably would have gotten me killed. That was one of the things that, alcohol allowed me to just kind of float back there. And I was talking with the guy tonight about the way that I used to be. And that we're in the first part of the book in step one, and that little part where it says take a trip, not take a trip. And see, I'm the kind of guy that. That can sit in the bar, sit on the stool, and I can be there with you and have a conversation. Or I can be at the bar and be sitting on the stool and talking to you. But I'm not there. I'm out there somewhere. And people often looked at me and said, oh, boy, stay away from him. And I used to, there was a bar that I used to drink in that was populated by people that ran on two-wheeled vehicles and didn't bathe very often and liked to beat on one another. And they left me alone because I was strange. When I took my inventory, I found out that I was, What can I tell you? I love sponsorship, and the reason that I love sponsorship is that it has allowed me to find out more about myself. I often think about the role of the sponsor, and I know what the role of the sponsor is, and that is that it's to keep the guy amused till God gets him sober. And any time that I think I can get somebody sober, you know, I'm doomed to failure because, you know, I couldn't get my own self sober. So, you know, how am I going to get somebody else sober? Plus, if I can't get them sober, I can't get them drunk. You know, all I can do is show them what I've done and go on from there. And I'm ever so grateful that there was a man that did that for me in January of 1992. You know, there may have been others that came before him that had told me the truth about alcoholism. But all that I ever remember about those kind of people was that they were always waving their finger at me. You know, they're always in a position of authority and would tell me that, you know, Frank, you drink too much, and Frank, you got to do this about it. And in January of 1992, or thereabouts, there was a man that instead of telling me what, you know, what my problem was, he told me what his problem was. And then instead of him telling me what I should do about my problem, he told me what he did about his. And with that approach, I believe he was the first man that ever did that to me. You know, there may have been others, but I certainly don't remember them. And basically what it got down to was that, you know, if this guy, you know, I identified with him and identified in the sense that he drank just like I did, you know. He was a, you know, it's like the light switch. It's either on or off, you know, and that's the way that I drank was that, you know, when there was booze, I drank. And when there wasn't, where I was horizontal, then I didn't. And I'm not going to tell you that I was a, you know, I drank around the clock every day for, you know, God knows how many years, because I also know that that's not the way that it is. I mean, I'm the classic guy, you know, that it talks about in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, that when I honestly want to stop, I can't. And when I do drink, I find I have little or no control over the amount that I do take. And as I say, that I'm the kind of guy that, you know, when I want to stop, I stop. The problem is I can't stay stopped. You know, what happens to me is that life piles up on me and then I got to drink again. Because, the, you know, the drink is my solution to life. I often, you know, that people would point at me and they'd say that I was a problem drinker. And I'm not a problem drinker. I'm a solution drinker. When I got a problem, I drink. It's a solution, you know. No, I'm not a problem drinker. I'm a solution drinker. And I also look at the, you know, that second question in We Agnostics about, you know, when I do drink, I can't predict the amount that I'm, you know, what I'm going to do. You know, one time I walk in, I've got an engagement at night, you know, and after work I go and I stop and I have a little pop at, you know, at the local gin mill. And I go in and I have one and I walk out. I go home. And I can have the same engagement, you know, the next week. You know, same thing that I got to do. And I walk in there, and I have that one, and then I stay for the second one, and the third, and I'm there till it closes. You know, and I can't predict. And I've got the same thing that I've got to do. You know, same engagement. You know, just one of those where, you know, I don't think about it. Well, you know, there's just something that happens to me that says, you know, tonight you're going to drink. And in the end, I was the maintenance type drinker. You know, I had to stop the willies. I had to, you know. Had to calm my nerves, you know, and that is to say that you know that alcohol was there, and I had to take it on a daily basis, and not falling down drunk or knee walking drunk, but you know, it was enough to keep me going. In the book Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, the part that was just read tonight, it says something to the effect that I'm supposed to tell you how. What I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now, and but I think there's a far better, you know, more, there's another statement that happens before that, happens about 20 pages, in fact, 19 pages, page 29. And it says that I'm supposed to tell you in my own words, and from my own point of view, how I came to have a relationship with the God of my understanding. And in order to tell you how I came to have a God in my life, what I have to do is let you know why I didn't have a God in my life. And I believe it's because, as a young man, I was a juvenile delinquent, and I wasn't a very good one. You know, I got caught. And one of those times when I got caught, I was sitting in front of the judge, and the judge is waving his finger in my face, as judges are apt to do when I'm in their presence. And this judge is telling me that I lack structure in my life and I lack direction. And he felt the way that I would get this structure and direction was that I would go off to church or Sunday school or something like that for a year, once a week for a year. Part of probation, and I dutifully did so. And all I remember is going to the Waller Road Baptist Church in Tacoma, Washington, and listen to that minister in the front of the room. You know, he'd talk about the sinner, and he'd point, nobody point out but me, and lightning bolts would come out of his finger and strike me in the chest, but he was talking about what God was going to do to me, and that's what I heard. You know, I know that it's far different than, you know, my perception is what I heard, not necessarily what came out of that man's mouth, but what I did hear and what I felt at that time was that if God was going to get me for those things that I'd already done, and also for those things that I knew that I was going to go off and do, so consequently, you know, what I would do is that I consciously made a decision that God and I would part company. You know, that I'll do this thing called life of my own volition. I'll take that round peg and put it in the square hole, no matter how much effort that it takes. My mind is a lot like a gerbil cage. It goes around and around and around and around and around. And when I was a juvenile, about the same time as that all this was going on, I found this magic elixir called alcohol. It was the stick that I could put in there and make my mind stop. I could still my mind. I could make my life. I could make my mind just be at ease. You know that statement in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, the doctor's opinion about, you know, that the alcoholic is restless, irritable, and discontented unless he can experience that sense of ease and comfort that comes from having a few drinks. And I know what that ease and comfort is. You know, it's one of those things that when I first drank, that's what I got. And that's what, you know, there's a lot of people around Alcoholics Anonymous will tell you that, you know, I did the same thing over and over again expecting different results. I didn't do that. Not me. I did that same thing. I drank over and over and over again to experience that same thing, that utopian feeling that I got the first time that I drank. You know, that's why I drank, was to get that feeling. And it was that day on the first day that I drank and that day on the last day that I drank. Unfortunately, what the problem was that in the end, I could never get back to that utopian thing. Because, see, I'm the kind of guy that what happens to me is that, you know, that I can get to utopia on, you know, two, maybe three drinks. The problem is I can't stop with two or three. You know, I got to have more and more and more, and I just go beyond. I'm a bad shot. I wouldn't make it in the NBA because I couldn't hit the hoop. You know, I'd be going over it every time. I'm the kind of guy that doesn't take responsibility for his own actions. When I was in my mid-20s, I was in the jail here in Plainfield, New Jersey, and they were taking the bailiff was taking my shoelaces and my belt away from me, and I'm asking him, why are you doing this to me? And he told me that I had assaulted my wife. And I being an alcoholic, I want to set the record straight, let him know that he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. And I informed him that you know, I was drunk and I'd swung at her, but I'd missed. So consequently, it wasn't assault. And he as he clanged the door shut, he assured me that it was. And so, you know, the next day, this was 30 years ago, and 30 years ago, if she wouldn't sign the complaint the next day, they couldn't keep you. You know, all that's changed today, you know. But back then, you know, so I got out the next day, and I went back to that house, and, you know, I've come to know alcoholism is the disease of perception. It's how I see it. It's my story. I'm going to tell it the way that I want it. If my ex-wife were standing up here, you know, telling my story, she would probably tell you that she kicked me out of that house. You know, but I'm here telling the story, and I'm going to tell you that she threw me in jail. So therefore, I left that place because she did it for me. You know, I moved out so that I could, you know, live life the way that I wanted to go live life. But I also knew at that time in my life that I wasn't doing some things that would have put a smile on my mother's face. So what I did is I went off and I cleaned up my act. Got a new car, got a new job, got a new place to live, a new wife. You know, I got caught up in the worldly clamor type things. But I didn't do anything about what was going on inside me. I was still trying to do this thing of my own. And then I'm in my mid-30s. And I'm standing in front of a judge, and the judge is waving his finger in my face, as judges are apt to do when I'm in their presence. And this judge is telling me that I had a problem with alcohol, and I knew that I had a problem with alcohol at that time in my life. And the problem was that I was in his courtroom, and right across the street was a perfectly good gin mill I could have been sitting in, knocking back a couple of cold ones. But also, you know, it's the disease of perception. It's how I see things. This judge didn't know anything about alcoholics, Alcoholics Anonymous. So he asked me, you know, the astute observer of mankind, to go off and observe Alcoholics Anonymous on his behalf and report back my findings. And I went to one meeting a week for 16 weeks. I used to go to the place closest to my home, because I didn't have a driver's license to go anywhere else. I would get there just as the meeting started, or even after it had gotten started. Who needs to hear the secretary's reports, you know? I was there for the meat of the meeting. I was there for the message, you know. And I will tell you that if I could have left before the Lord's Prayer, I would have done so, but I had a little piece of paper that I needed to get signed in order to get out of that room. And lo and behold, I find out I could have signed the damn things myself. Could have gone to Carol's Wine Cellar and done the deal there, you know. But I don't know whether I heard any message there or not. I do remember that there was a man, as I would walk away from the building, he would say, "You'll be back." If any of you were out in the Pakong area, that was Rotten Ray was the guy's name, and it was being prophetic that, it was a few years later that, I was back. I'm in my mid-40s, and I'm standing in front of a judge, and the judge is waving his finger in my face. Judges are apt to do when I'm in their presence. And what I'll do is I'll set the table as to why I'm standing in front of the judge, because it depicts what my drinking had deteriorated to. You know, I was at a meeting last night, and I shared that, you know, I was the epitome of the Skid Row bum. Because my first encounter in an establishment that served liquor, we used to steal it from the liquor stores, or not the liquor stores, but we go steal beer and wine from the Safeway at, I live in the state of Washington, you could do that. But my first drinking in any bars was on First Avenue in Seattle, Washington. That's the original Skid Row. You know, and it got its name from the way they skid logs down through there. But I will tell you that that's where I started my drinking, and it never got any better. You know, it went downhill from that point. But here I am in my mid-40s, and I arise on this morning in November 1991, and I have the alcoholic debate as to whether I will go to work or I'll stay home. I'll stay home and see if those people work, if that firm can survive without me. And then I come to my senses, and that is to say that if I stay home, I'm going to have to tell my wife where I'd been last night, what I'd been doing, and who I'd been doing it with. And it wasn't that I wanted to be dishonest with her. You know, don't get me wrong there either. There's probably many a time that I wanted to be dishonest with her. For the most part, I had no idea where I'd been the night before, what I'd been doing, who I'd been with. Because I'd become the consummate blackout drinker. You know, I would have little glimpses, a lot like my driving, you know. I'd weave in and out of consciousness, you know, and I'd get little glimpses of where I'd been. But that'd be about the extent of it, you know. So off to work I go, and it comes noontime, and the gerbil cage is going. And I got to stop it. So what do? I go off for lunch at the local gin mill. And I go in there and have that half a dozen drinks that it takes for me in order to still my mind. And then at 4:30, I go to my car and have the alcoholic debate. And that is, you know, shall I go home or shall I go to the gin mill? And I assure you that if I had gone home that night, that I would have gone to the liquor store and got myself a little traveling companion to get myself home on. But I didn't that night. What I did is I went to the local gin mill. And I don't remember why, or, you know, it doesn't really make any difference. I went in there and, you know, I'm only going to have a couple, you know, just enough to still my mind, just to, you know, so just make it so that I can have life tolerable enough to go on. And, it's 4:30 when I walk in there, and I'm just going to have a couple, and now it's 11 o'clock. And, you know, I drink more than a couple an hour, you know, I mean, that's, you know, I've been in there for 5, 6, 7 hours, and I know that the state of New Jersey frowns on those people that drink and drive. So I know that if I leave there early, you know, I got a plan. I got the keen alcoholic mind. You know, I've got a plan, and the plan is I'll leave early. So, you know, I'm not out there on the roads at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'll be out there at 11, 11:30, something like that. And that way, you know, the cops won't recognize that I've been drinking. But I got a problem. I got a 45-minute ride home, and I have a bladder that'll only last me about 20-25 minutes. And you don't have to be much of a mathematician to figure out that if I don't stop somewhere on the way home, I'm going to end up home with a rusty zipper and wet socks. And what do I do? I don't stop next to an oak tree and relieve myself. Hell no. You know, I'm not going to do that. A cop will come by and, you know, give me tickets for other things, and I don't want that. But what do? I stop at a gin mill, and I go in and I use their facilities. Then I reward them with my presence by having a couple while I'm in there. And there's one particular night I'd come through, I was down in the Long Valley, and I stopped at this place and went in and did my deal, and, you know, relieved myself and had my couple and back on the road. And I can distinctly remember coming through the middle of Long Valley and Washington Township, and the cop comes in behind me, and on come the lights. I pull over the side of the road, and I remember taking the keys out of the ignition and throwing them up on the dashboard and saying, you know, I'm not going to have to do this anymore. And what I wasn't going to have to do was I wasn't going to have to drink and drive. Because I knew the state of New Jersey would take driving out of the equation. Yeah, that's quite simple, you know, that I'm not going to drive, you know, for a good long period of time. But it never occurred to me to stop drinking, you know, because I knew at that time in my life that I couldn't stop. You know, I wasn't going to fool myself. You know, I wasn't going to do that. But this judge was going to do, you know, he did me a favor, and in court he said that he'd make a deal with me, and I'm an alcoholic. I like to make deals. You know, give me the one behind door two, you know, and he said no. What he'd do is he'd trade me 90 days in the Morris County Jail for a stint in a rehab at my expense. And if any of you get over to, tomorrow night when you're over there at St. Clair's, Riverside Hospital in Booton, the Biltmore in Booton, you'll see some heel marks out there in the driveway, you know, and those belong to me. Because, you know, I went to that place not because I wanted to go there. I went there because, you know, I'm the reluctant to recover class. I don't want to do this deal, but I got to get out of going to jail. You know, I got to do that. You know, I'll do anything. Just don't send me to jail. But I went there, and I know today what happened was that establishment, that institution, believes in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they have a meeting of recovery brought in on a daily basis. On the weekends, there's 3 meetings each day that the patients can participate in. And what happened was that I heard a message, not from somebody of authority, but I heard a message from individuals talk about how the drink had affected them, and I could recognize that. And then they also talked about that they had found a means by which they'd been able to stay stopped. See, my problem has never been to stop. My problem has always been to stay stopped. And these people seem to have a method by which they could do it. So I left there with all the rehab jargon, you know, don't drink, go to meetings, 90 meetings in 90 days, and that's all well and good for people. But for a guy like me that has a mind like a gerbil cage that goes around and around and around, I'm worse off than I've ever been, you know, because I can't solve my problems. You know, everything piles up on me, and I had a grumpy old man for a sponsor, who liked to go to, you know, his idea was don't drink, go to meetings. That's the kind of guy that he was. And a couple of months of that, and I'm so dry that it, you can't put a match next to me because I'll, you know, poof, I'll go up. I had sobriety, as near as I could tell. But I had the opportunity to go to an all-day AA function, and this gentleman that asked me if I'd like to go, he picked me up at my house early in the morning, and we had a little over an hour drive from Fort Packong down to Jersey City. And all that damn guy talked about the entire trip was, you know, he says, you know, whatever I am today is due directly to those actions that I've taken in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then throughout the day, all those damn people at this meeting, all they talked about was, you know, whatever they were today was due directly to those actions that they'd taken in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then he stuffed me back in his car and for the ride home, and all he talked about was, you know, whatever he was today was due directly to those actions that he had taken in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when he dropped me off at the house, I didn't walk away from the car. I ran like hell. But I was intrigued about his demeanor. And that is to say that he possessed something that I had never, never experienced in my life up till that time. And that is to say that he had a little peace of mind. You know, he had a little serenity, and I had never been able to experience that. The only way that I had been able to experience that was through the bottle. And I know that all it was just, I know today that it was just temporary. And, so I asked him to be my sponsor, he like the judge the first judge that I ever sat in front of, he told me that, you know, alcoholics are undisciplined. They lack structure. And he explained sponsorship to me from the terms that he'd come to know sponsorship. And that is to say that he said that, I was going to need to take some direction, not of my own making. You know, up until that time in my life, I had made every decision. I decided when things were going to happen and the amount that they were going to happen. And he says that what I was going to have to do was stop doing that. You know, I didn't know that, later on he was going to, tell me that I had to stop playing God. But I didn't learn that till later on. But what he did was he started to give me this structure, not of my own making, and I was soon to learn that there were other things that I needed to do, and some of that structure I thought was rather juvenile, sophomoric, said if you're going to be at the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, make it look like, you know, that Alcoholics Anonymous works, you know, and talk like it works, even though you may on the inside not feel that way. It says on the outside, make it look like it. And said that I had to call him once a week on his terms when he wanted me to. He told me I could call him anytime. That is to say that said if you call me at 3 o'clock in the morning, he says make sure that it's damn important. And he also said that if I called him up when I was drunk, that all I'd hear from the other end of the phone was the click of the receiver as he put it down. Because he said if you've taken a drink, you put yourself beyond human aid, and all I am is a human being. And I can't help you then, he says. But if you call me before you take the drink, and he said, even if you can convince me that you need to take a drink, he says, you know, well, I'll get in my car and I'll go buy the bottle and I'll bring it right over to your house, and I'll be able to watch you kill yourself, you know. And I haven't had to do that, you know. I haven't had the obsession was lifted a long time ago. And I can't put my finger on exactly when it was, but it happened. You know. But he told me that I was going to have to work steps in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, with him. And I like to say that what he did is he taught me how to read. You know, and I'm a guy with a fair amount of schoolhousing behind me, and he said what I had to do was I would read a part of the book, and then we would sit down and we would talk about it. And every time that we would talk about it, what he would do is he'd ask me what I read, and I would tell him, and then he'd say, no, it's not what it's like. And what he would do is he'd take the book, and he'd open it up, and he'd start reading out of the book, and he'd say, that's what's there. And, what I learned out of that was that I'd been reading between the lines and out in the margin, trying to make it bigger than what it actually was. And it's so damn simple, I almost missed it, but, if I just read the black parts of the book, I'd be able to find out how to get sober, and even more importantly, how to stay sober. No, I worked steps with him. I got to the 12th step, and after we discussed that, I said, what do I do next? And he says, this thing's a lot like a clock. It goes 1 to 12. What happens after 12? And like I say, I got a fair amount of schoolhouse, and I know 1 comes next. You know? And he says, yep, what you need to do is go out and find some sick puke like yourself and sit down with him and show him how you got sober, but more importantly, how you stay sober. You know, it's one of these that, you know, that's... It's been a real revelation of my in myself, and that is that you know, those people that I sponsor, those people that I sit down with in the book, they show me more about myself than I could have ever learned on my own. You know, I could sit there, you know, me trying to figure out who I am and you know, trying to figure out my problems is a lot like pushing a rope. You know, I expend a lot of energy, but I don't get a lot of work done. You know, when I work with others, I'm pulling on the rope, trying to pull somebody along, help them along, and that's when I, you know, I get to take care of my problems. I'm a whiner at heart. That is to say that, you know, I've more than one time my sponsor has said, you know, would you like a little cheese with that wine? And I would call him up and say, you know, I got this problem. Let me back up. What it would be is I told him, see, I read in the book, I read ahead. You know, I wanted to figure out how this thing was going to end. You know, so I got into that part of the book where I didn't think he had been. You know, I didn't think he'd been up there, back there in chapter 11, and it said that there should be a place where the newcomer can bring his problems. You know, there should be a meeting where a newcomer can bring his problems. And I said, look at that. You know, I can take my problems to Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, no, you can take them there. He says, you just can't tell anybody about them. He says, you know, those people got plenty of problems of their own. They don't need any more. He says, but what you might do is you might bring your problem to me, and I'll give you a solution to your problem. And after I give you the solution, you can operate on with that solution, and you'll now get results. And he says, you can take those results back to the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then you can tell people, you know, I had this problem, this is what I did about it, and this is what happened. And therefore, what happens is that maybe there's a person in the audience that has had that same problem, and they're able to get beyond it because they heard what your experience was. Because what we can't do in Alcoholics Anonymous is talk about theory. What we have to do is pass on our experience. Mm-hmm. But I still would, you know, I would give him a problem, and what would he do? He'd say, well, Frank, why don't you go over to Stanhope and help put up the chairs? And I'd say, well, what the hell does that have to do with my problem? That's not an answer. And now, you also have to understand, I never said that. Now, that's what was, you know, that's what was in my brain, but it never got to my lips. Because I knew, you know, I knew that me arguing with my sponsor was a lot like taking a knife to a gunfight. You know, it just wasn't going to happen. You know, it wasn't going to happen. I figured that out early on. I saw other people make that mistake, and I said, not me. You know, I can learn from others' mistakes. I don't have to make that one. But he would tell me, go to Stanhope, help him put up the chairs. And what the hell does that have to do with, you know, with my problem? That didn't get any help. And lo and behold, I'd find out. I'd go over to Stanhope, and I'd be putting up the chairs. And what would happen was there would become this thought in my head of what I should do about the problem. You know, when I help others, that's when the answers come to me. When I'm trying to figure out the problem, figure out an answer to a problem, what it is that I line all these things up, and I do a whole bunch of debating. And when I'm off there helping somebody else, It allows God to come into my life, and the answer comes of what I'm supposed to do about that. And a lot of times what it is why don't you just leave the problem alone? You know, I think it has to be fixed, and a lot of times problems don't need to be fixed. They just need to be left alone, and they'll take care of themselves. They don't need my help to get rid of them. Two years ago, in sobriety, I lost my job at 28 years. You know, it was to me, it was a traumatic experience. You know, and I will tell you that the first thing when they handed me the pink slip was that I called my sponsor, and And he said, "Well, what you going to do?" I said, "Well, I'm going to clean out my desk and leave. You know, what else can I do?" And I said, "And I got to take my calls tonight for the guys that I sponsor. And then tomorrow, I guess I'll have to start looking for a job, won't I?" And I will tell you that I had this job for a long time, and I was a person that I was the loyal employee. Actually, I was the fearful employee, and that was that I didn't have enough guts to leave there. You know, I'm going to stay, you know, and I'll be the guy that turns the lights out. And basically what they did is they did me a favor. They did something for me that I couldn't do for myself, and that was to leave there. And I left the company, and I didn't have a resume. I hadn't had a resume in 28 years, and put a resume together and went on a few interviews, and you know, in June 2 years ago, I got a job. It's 10 minutes away from my house. It pays more than I was making there. They give me a lot of responsibility. I will tell you that one of the people that's there, he was the one. The reason I'm there is he's there, and they asked him. You know, they asked him if I could do the job, and he said I could. And I told him afterwards that he told me that. I said, "Well, then if I fail at the job, it's not my fault. It's your fault." They gave me a lot of responsibility there, a lot of stuff that I go, you know, this is far beyond what I should have. But I know I have it today because of the actions that I took in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there isn't a problem that I have today in my life that isn't a sober problem. It isn't something that I have because I got sober. It's because I got, you know, because I worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I look at things like that, I go, you know, it's like a neat deal. It's a good deal. You know, I'll take those kind of problems. I've had things, 10 months sober, my mother passed away. The fortunate thing about it was that before she had passed away, 2 weeks before she passed away, I'd gone to visit with her, gone on vacation with her, and spent a week with her, and had tried to make those amends, even though I hadn't gotten that far in the step work formally. You know, I talked to her about what I was doing, about my drinking, and she was very, very happy that her son had gotten sober, because my mother. Had asked my wife one time, "Does he always drink that much?" And what it was, I had been on my best behavior. She didn't know how much I had been drinking. You know, I'd bring a six pack home, but that, you know, we were out on vacation at that time, and I'd bring a six pack into the house and make it last all day, and hell, what I was doing, I was nipping on the bottle out behind the barn, you know. She only wanted, when I asked her what I could do for, you know, for her as far as sobriety, you know, what she says, just keep doing what you're doing, because, you know, that's all she ever wanted. She passed away, and it's one of the few times that I've ever called my sponsor at an off hour and or off time, and it was late at night, and asked him what I should do. And he said I should go make myself available to those people, you know, to my brothers and my sister. So I hung up with him, and then I called my brother back and you know, what can I do and how can I be of service, and went out for the funeral, and I was of service to those people. I was a brother that I'd never been. You know, I was allowed to be part of the family. And it's not that I'd never been allowed to be part of the family, but I participated not from the role of, you know, trying to push things on people, but more from the role of how can I be of service. And in so doing, you know, I really kind of reconciled some of those things that had gone on in my life. You know, the amends process that I've had to go through, the formal end of things has always been that I approach somebody and describe the nature of my wrong and ask them what they would have me do, you know, to take care of it. I always have fear in my heart when that when I do that. As an instance, one of my ex-wives. You know, I'm a collector in life. I'm a collector of many ex-wives. You know, one of my current wife's uncle says, he married housekeepers. You know, married them and then they kept the house when they divorced them. But that was him, not me. I never had a house. His last wife. One of my ex-wives called me and through our son tried to get in touch with me, and I hadn't talked to her in, I believe it was 17 years at that time. And I went to my sponsor and I said, what should I do? And he says, call her up, find out what she wants and do it. She was out on the West Coast and I'm here on the East Coast, and I said, well, where am I going to get the courage? And he said, well, you get the courage as you're dialing the phone. And I said, well, what do I say? And he says, you'll know what to say when she says hello from the other end. You know, and all that fear of, what is she going to want? You know, what is she going to take away from me? You know, it's basic fears, you know, that's all it is. And I called her up and when she answered the phone, I'm here to tell you that I just said, you know, how can I help you? And she told me what she wanted done or what I could do, and I was already trying to do it to the best of my ability anyway, and it wasn't something that, you know, I had expected something from her, you know, something, some big demand and a lecture, and that didn't happen. And I will tell you that from that day forward, we've had a civil, you know, we're not on one another's Christmas card list. Don't get me wrong there. But by the same token, we have a we can have civil conversations with one another. I was out there on vacation last year went out for dinner, took my wife and we went out for dinner one night. And 2 years ago, my son got married for the third time. You know, it must be something that runs in the family. You know, at that wedding, I saw my ex-wife dance with my wife. You know, and if you don't think that AA works, I'll give you an example. You know, when ex-wives, dance with your wife today, that the AA works. You know, those actions that I took in Alcoholics Anonymous do work. Today, when the gerbil cage gets gone, what I ask God to do is still my mind. You know, and on a daily basis, when I arise in the morning, I remind myself what I am, not who I am. Who I am is my ego, and I go off and get drunk in a heartbeat. What I am is an alcoholic. And an alcoholic needs to do certain things, or I found I need to do certain things. And those things are that I need to develop that conscious contact with God as soon as I arise in the morning. And so what I do is I go off and I do a little reading. I'm not a self-starter, so I got to get something to get me going. So I got some things that I read to give me some thoughts of, you know, what God would have me be today and what direction He would have me go. And I plan out my day, and when I find myself backed up and out of sorts, I always look back and say, you know, where did I get off the track, and get back to that point and go in the direction I'm supposed to go. And at the end of the day, I always look back and make sure that I've done those things that I was supposed to. And if I've harmed anybody, when I go to bed at midnight, I don't call them up and say, you know, hey, I did this to you, because all I'm going to do is open up a sore that. But what I also, what I do is that I do write it down. I write down who it is that I offended, what it was that I, you know, what it affected in me, and what I had done, and more importantly, what I should have done otherwise, you know. And I always write it down, because if I don't write it down, I have a mechanism in my head, and that is to say that if I go to sleep with this thought, if I don't have it written down, by the next morning I will have turned it around from me offending you to you offending me. And therefore, instead of me owing you an amends, you owe me an amends. And I saw in my inventory when I took that's what I had been doing my entire life. You know, I'd been convoluting everything that came down the pike, and so what I do today is put it on a piece of paper, and the next morning I can actually read my handwriting, and what I know is that I got to go take care of those things as soon as I can. One of the foremost things that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is that there's a mechanism in every alcoholic's mind, and they turn off the hearing after 1 hour. So if I talk any longer, nobody's going to listen to me. It's been good to be here tonight. It's been, I'm certainly happy that I'm sober. But more importantly, I got to hang around with some sober people tonight. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Frank, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. We have cake in the back in the room, courtesy of Brian staying sober. And Frank, could you close us out with the Lord's Prayer?
All right.
Can we pause for a moment to reflect why we're here, followed by the Lord's Prayer? Thank you. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thank you. Yeah.